Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1 cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
All right. How's everybody doing at the National? What's going on, everybody? This is an absolutely insane place to be doing a live podcast. This is an absolutely insane backdrop. My first time at the National. I'm Adam Weinrib. I am the co-host of the Baseball Insiders Fan Sided podcast about the ins and outs of baseball rumors and what goes on at the trade deadline, winter meetings, etc. This is the first live show we've ever done. We really appreciate everybody joining us. But of course, nobody cares about me. Everybody who's here and everybody who's listening is here for Fan Sided MLB Insider Robert Murray, the trade breaker himself, the guy who got the Rafael Devers trade, and the guy who just had himself one heck of a trade deadline. Incredible final 24 hours. Incredible final 3 hours, Robert. Thank you for joining me in Chicago. How you doing?
I'm great. It feels good to be here. It was an absolutely hectic trade deadline for me. I know for everybody here at FanSided, but it is a tremendous honor to be here in an absolutely crazy setting. So I'm excited to be here, Adam. I'm ready to talk some baseball, maybe talk some cards. Who knows? But how are we doing today?
We're doing good. I think there's some talk about tomorrow, maybe. We're going to be back here, I believe, 2:30. There was talk about maybe we rip something on stage, like maybe do a little breaking. I have been thinking about going to the National pretty much as long as I've been a sports fan and a memorabilia fan. And I was like, when I was like 12, 13, I was like, man, this has to be the only place on earth that's like full of nerds like me. Like the only place that's just full of me's. And then I never got here. This is my first time here in my life. Yeah. And I'm happy to report that it's exactly what I expected it to be when I was 12, 13. It's full of people who have the same crazy interests. It's leveled up so significantly. The amount of quality memorabilia here is unmatched. I just got 10% off on something that felt like I won. I'm trying to complete a Hall of Famer autograph collection. So if anybody, all right, here's my stated goal, right? And we'll, might as well just do the business up top. And we're about to talk a lot of trade deadline, you know, picking up the pieces, figuring out what, and that's going to be the bulk of the show today. But if anybody can get me a Don Drysdale certified autograph, I'm looking under $60.
It's going to be way easier said than done. Good luck.
I just said it, and it was really easy to say. It's going to be impossible to do. Yeah. But I'm talking, certified would be great. Plaque card, fine. You know, 8x10, wonderful. 60 is my current max, but the fact that I'm saying that out loud means everybody knows I'll go 80. Like, you all know that.
I think you're going 200.
I'm calling it right now. I know how much cash I took out, so I know that there. I know what the actual upper limit is.
Yeah. Either way, I got to get you that card today. Whether or not you spend 60, 80, 200, 500, you're getting that card, Adam. I'm making you get it.
Are you going to buy anything today? Do you have a personal budget? We just did a lap around, like, where you're eyes open by what you saw, or
my eyes are open when I saw an Ichiro Suzuki autographed jersey for $37,000. I mean, that's absolutely crazy. Like, that opened my eyes immediately. There's so much cool memorabilia and just everything here. I didn't come in expecting to buy anything, but honestly, like, I could see myself actually getting something. It's pretty cool.
I saw some there were like Ichiro Bowman Chrome rookies signed, like autographed retroactively, where I was like, first of all, I'm not sure why you would do that, but now that you've done it, I kind of want to get a crack. I mean, again, we're talking thousands. I gotta take a trip back to the ATM, I guess, if we're gonna do that. But objectively, this is a wild place. We thank you so much for having us, and let's talk a little trade deadline.
Let's do it.
Let's get into. So, I mean, the last couple hours were out of control. I was just, you know, on the editorial side of things, it was hard to keep up with everything that was going on. Yeah. What was that like for you? How do you handle that whirlwind? How many texts are you sending? When does it start, too? Because this was a slow deadline. People were complaining. Yeah. You know, people were mad at us that nothing was happening and there was no action. And then the day before the deadline, it exploded, which only led to more activity on the final day and the final hours.
Yeah. Entering this entire stretch, I was told it was going to be a very busy last 24 hours, and it even far exceeded my expectations. Like, we saw more action than I think anybody could have ever anticipated, whether it was Mason Miller, Shane Bieber. I mean, the Padres doing whatever that they ended up doing. There were so many trades, and for me, it was beyond hectic. I was sending texts left and right. I was getting texts, whether it's from general managers, players, asking me, like, hey, am I getting traded? Like, what is our team doing? Agents wondering what's going on with their clients, or other executives wondering what other teams are doing, and trying to mesh all that. I started my day at 4 a.m., and I remember I was like, I got to get to the gym. I got to be able to relax and, like, calm my brain down because it's such a hectic day. And then all of a sudden, as I'm driving, Bieber gets traded to the Jays, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And it's like, each time that Shane Bieber is broken, by the way, I've been driving. So I guess that's the key to Shane Bieber. I ended up getting traded or signing somewhere. But it was so busy. It was so chaotic. I remember talking to some people that made a lot of trades at the end of the day, and they said they've never experienced anything quite like it in their entire lives. I know from my end reporting stuff, it was chaotic. I had the Camilo Doval trade at the end. I was waiting for the go text, and then Jack Curry tweeted it out from under me, which, Jack, I'll never forgive you for that. No, I'm just kidding. Jack is great, but it was chaotic, and I cannot wait to dive into this.
Well, after one day post Camilo Doval trade, I am wondering if we can maybe get, you know, can we undo the Camilo Doval trade? Is that possible? I don't, yeah. Usually there's still stuff, there's business happening 20, 30 minutes after the deadline. This time I feel like that wasn't entirely the case. Like, a lot of it got announced pre 6 p.m. Eastern, but there was just such a wild flurry at that 5:58 mark on the East Coast.
There was, and there was one in particular that was just mind-blowing to me. It was, all of a sudden, I got a text from a different executive about 25 minutes after, like, the true deadline happened, and it was like, check in Milwaukee. They may have done something. I'm like, what are you talking about? And texting people with Milwaukee, and then next thing I know, find out they get Shelby Miller and that there's another player involved. And I heard it was an injured player. I was thinking it was Jalen Beeks or something like that. And it actually was Jordan Montgomery going to Milwaukee. And nobody, I had it with a really good source initially, a second source who would definitively know, and yet I still did not believe it. It was crazy. And the Brewers took on about $3 million in that contract when it's all said and done, I believe. But that was one of just the craziest moves in the deadline for me, because I don't think any, like, I can speak for both of us here. Nobody saw Jordan Montgomery getting traded.
No. I saw Jordan Montgomery getting traded at the winter meetings. Yeah. And then I forgot Jordan Montgomery was still an active MLB player and available to be traded.
Yeah.
When does he come back? Like, is he?
I don't think he's coming back this year.
No, is he? Yeah.
It felt like a pure salary dump by the Diamondbacks in order for the Brewers to take on Shelby Miller as well. So some logic there. They freed up, I want to say, about $18 million in Arizona. And from everything that I can gather, they're going to be spending it all and then some in the offseason.
Yeah, Arizona made it pretty clear. They gave a little bit of a wink to Merrill Kelly, too, after they dealt him. I felt like saying, I don't remember what the exact language was in the presser, but it was like, you know, obviously we felt we had to, you know, do what we had to do. And as for next year, we'll all have conversations about that when it comes, you know, of all the people who will more than likely reunite with the team that traded them, it feels like Kelly and the Diamondbacks are a natural match.
They definitely want Merrill Kelly back. And I wouldn't be surprised if he wants to be back either. Like, he is a guy that they love the player, and it was a very tough idea or thought of giving up on him, or at least for the remainder of this season. But we've seen players get traded in the past and return to the team that traded them. I think that's definitely in play. Zach Gallen, who stayed, is going to get the qualifying offer in Arizona. So, I mean, he might end up staying too. Suarez, I mean, his market's going to be pretty hot in the offseason. But the guy that I think has a very realistic chance of being back in Arizona next year is Kelly.
Well, we're going to talk a lot of the specific teams and the way that, you know, there are some talking points and questionable moves and player moves and fits that I don't necessarily agree with. And I'm going to dig into a bunch of the people who confuse me the most and ask you to try to make sense of some of them as the show goes on. But let's start at the simplest base level. Like, what are the three clearest winning teams from this trade deadline? Who do you say? And obviously, if you're going to say the Yankees, I think you literally have to qualify and say that yesterday doesn't count, not real, it was a fever dream, that never happened, where all three of their new reliever additions combined to allow 9 earned runs and 2 1/3 innings. So we'll scratch that.
Is that not good?
I mean, 9 earned runs for the remainder of the year was maybe what I was hoping for from Duvall and Bednar, and they did it in a day. So not my favorite. I would still put them in my winners column, though, because I'm not ready to write off any of those folks. But which three teams would you say were the clearest winners of this year's trade deadline?
I mean, we can start with the Yankees. I mean, it did not look good yesterday by any means of the imagination.
No, it looked bad.
Oh, it was worse than
actually
bad.
It looked really, really bad.
Yeah. But they got impact relievers. I really like what they ended up doing there. And there's nothing that is more important than pitching when it comes to October baseball. And they're built to win in the postseason. I'm a little worried about the rest of the team. I thought they could have absolutely done more. They were not really involved in Suarez that much. I thought they should have done something quite like that, but McMahon has looked good so far. I really like his defense, his bat. Obviously, yesterday had a key hit late in the game there as well. So there was a lot of really good things there with the Yankees. I don't think they're a perfect team by any means, but they got better for sure.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Can I just dive into it now? The team that we all want to talk about is the San Diego Padres.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
And they want us to talk about them. But in this instance, I would say they wanted us to talk about them. They got what they wanted, but they're also set up to succeed in the postseason. They didn't just steal headlines. They're incredibly deep and threatening.
Yeah, they are. AJ Preller is unbelievable. Like, what he can do and how he can end up adding to a roster when... It's unmatched in baseball. I've called him the Howie Roseman of baseball for years now, and that's the biggest compliment I can ever give somebody. And what he's done, whether it was getting Ramon Laureano, getting Ryan O'Hearn from the Baltimore Orioles, and then getting Mason Miller and getting J.P. Sears. He got a catcher from the Royals as well. There are so many great things that he did. And he still was trying for Stephen Kwan. He was trying for Mackenzie Gore. He is relentless in the job that he does. Obviously, they gave up a tremendous amount of talent from their farm system. They gave up the number three prospect in baseball, gave up more, gave up six prospects overall in that deal with Baltimore. So it was a gutting of the farm system for sure. But he's proven time in and time again that he can build a farm system unlike any other general manager in baseball. I have tremendous confidence that he'll be able to do it again. It hasn't been to this level by any means, but it is incredibly impressive. And to me, they might be the actual favorite to win the World Series out of the National League.
Yeah, and we will get to your World Series predictions towards the end of the show. I definitely want to know how much this deadline changed your calculus there and what your thoughts are. But Yankees, Padres, Yankees did what they had to do to thicken out the bullpen, and we all forget about Game 1. The Padres did more than enough to cement themselves, and O'Hearn shocked me, considering I thought it was sort of down to Milwaukee or Boston for him. What is the team that you would say the third most successful team adding at this year's trade deadline?
You know, it's a great question, because I've been wondering about this. I'd call it the Seattle Mariners for sure, though.
Interesting.
There's some other candidates in there for sure with the Mariners and what they did and getting Suarez and getting Naylor. They could have done more on the pitching side, I thought, but that being said, they got two really impact bats there. They needed bats. Could have said that last year. Their offense last year was horrendous. Yeah. Did not do anything. They got ripped, and rightfully so. Ownership there has been in question with how much they've spent or how little they've spent. And they did a really smart move getting Naylor, and it was immediately clear that they were trying to get Suarez after that. There was some buzz in the media that they were like cooling on the idea of Suarez. It felt like a smokescreen all along.
Yes.
Got the player. Honestly, it wasn't that bad of a package in what they ended up giving up to get him. It was a smart move, and it showed that they're actually all in to win the World Series, which who would have thought we'd actually say that about the Seattle Mariners of all teams?
Yeah. And, yeah, I see we've got a Mariners fan walking past now. It's boom times for Mariners folks in the second half. And the way that they welcomed Eugenio Suarez back to the clubhouse, too, was sort of like, I've never seen maybe a move more orchestrated for a long time. Like, you're right, Smokescreen could not have been more obvious when they get Naylor and then the rest of the world sort of comes to their own conclusion. Well, I know how the Mariners operate. Yeah. Obviously, they're done because they're not going to get two impact bats in a row. Yep. They lay the groundwork. They lay the foundation. And then they hold the team plane so they could put Suarez on it. He's the lead photo on the graphic when the lineup comes out the next day. He's wearing the City Connect. It looks like he never left. Like, it's odd to see a team salary dump a player like that and then immediately be like, you know what, actually I love his salary now and I'm going to give up assets to get him. Yeah. But after so much talk about the rising cost of Suarez as a rental, Locklear and the two pitchers, I like Locklear. It's not an anti-Locklear take, but that's a bargain.
No, for sure. And he's already coming up for the Diamondbacks. He's going to play first base for them, and he's going to end up having an impact there. But I thought that price was going to be way more than it actually was. And it kind of reminded me, in a different sense, to like Jack Flaherty last year when the Dodgers got him in the prospect package. It was like, oh, that's all it took? Because he was by far and away like the best option in the market at that time, and it didn't take much. But the team that if they would have ended up getting Suarez, if the Brewers got Suarez, they would have been the winner or the third winner on this list. And from what I'm told, they were actually in second in trying to get Suarez. They finished the runner up, and I think Boston was involved to some degree. But the Brewers made a legitimate attempt at getting Suarez. Obviously, came up empty, came up short, but they tried. They ended up getting Shelby Miller, which I'm sure we'll talk about later on in the show, because that one was, again, great. We already talked about it. We'll talk about it again.
Probably going to talk about it again.
No, exactly. But it's the Brewers tried. They didn't get him. And it's actually, I don't know if they're going to be on a loser list, but they might be.
I was going to say, I mean, here's what, and for those who sat through us complimenting teams, we apologize because we know what you're here for is the losers of the trade deadline. I don't, like, people watch sports to learn who lost. I'll say that as a Yankee fan. People watch the Yankees hoping the Yankees lose baseball games so they can remind you that they lost. People watch the trade deadline to find out who screwed up the most. On my personal list of losers, and I think your perspective on this depends on what you think you're going for, like, actively dislike the moves a team made is loser. But watching a team fail to improve from a catbird seat, like the Milwaukee Brewers, to me, that's also a loser. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, in my opinion, there was a team at this particular deadline that redefined losing and had the type of 1970s trade deadline where, like, you just make you're getting taken advantage of by team after team. You're indecisive. You can't figure out what you're doing, and you just hope that no one's paying attention because, okay, well, only my local newspaper is going to cover this. You know, my fans are going to remember this forever. Hopefully this doesn't get picked up by a national outlet. But in 2025, everybody's watching. Yep. Everybody knows everything you're doing. The fans are smarter than ever. They're plugged in on farm systems. They're plugged in on rumors. They know who needs to be sold. They know whose salary needs to be cleared. And you can't pull off a deadline this bad anymore. And so that team for me is the Pittsburgh Pirates.
But
I'm going to toss it to you. The three biggest losers of this particular trade deadline to you, and then we can go deeper on any single one of them. Because obviously, I can talk about, and I think we should reserve a 40-minute block to talk about what the Pirates did.
40 minutes might not even be enough.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever had a reaction as strong as I've had with the Pirates and how bad their deadline was than any deadline before. It was horrendous. Like, they had an opportunity to shift things and just change things overall. And entering the like, if you would ask me even like 4 days prior to the deadline, I thought Mitch Keller was going to go.
Yeah.
David Bednar was going to go. Dennis Santana. I mean, all their rental guys as well. And they barely moved any of them. And the package for Bednar was a joke.
Yeah.
I remember on the podcast, on the day of the deadline, I said that the Yankees and Pirates' talks revolved around Rafael Flores going to the Pirates.
Yeah.
And Pirates fans were not happy about that whatsoever.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, an hour later, that happened. Flores is the headliner going back. I know we were going to talk about that part a little bit later. But what were they doing? It felt like an organization that does not have a plan by any means. And it was flabbergasting. It was confusing. It was every word that, like, goes along with that. I didn't understand it. Other GMs didn't understand it. Other executives didn't understand it. Other players didn't understand it. And when you can have everybody on the same page about it being that bad, then why is Ben Cherington in place in Pittsburgh? To me, this was the beginning of the end of his tenure in Pittsburgh. they should be internally, at least with Bob Nutting, going over candidates to try to fill in, to try to who can end up replacing Cherington in the offseason. So we'll see what happens with that. But that deadline overall was by far away the worst.
Yeah, the beginning of the end or the end of the end. Because, yeah. I mean, again, we are talking about, you come into this trade deadline special and you're planning on talking about winners and losers because that's, you know, you need to grade things and we all have that human urge. I never thought we'd be talking about a deadline as bad as what the Pirates just pulled off. Because there's, what do you lay out a worst case scenario before it even begins. And that worst case scenario is trade all their rentals for underwhelming packages. And then you have to look back and go, oh, you could have gotten more for Tommy Pham. Or, you know, oh, Heaney, if he hadn't had that terrible June and July, like they would have sold high, but instead they're stuck with this, you know, limited market. But in my mind, the worst case scenario for the Pirates is they sell all these guys and you look at the return and you kind of sneeze at it.
Yeah.
I never in a million years thought they would hold on to one of IKF, Tommy Pham, or Andrew Heaney. And they held on to all three.
Yeah, and I texted someone close to IKF and also Tommy Pham as well, and they were asking me for updates and like what I was hearing, and I was like, these guys might both stay, and they told me there's no way. Like, what are you talking about? And they stayed. Pham had no market. It was like,
that's insane to me.
Like, I can say that as 100% fact. Pham had zero market. I thought he made sense for the Padres. I even thought he could make sense for the Dodgers. Like as a bench guy or just like a vibes guy. Like it might sound weird saying that with Tommy Pham, but the Pirates in every organization he's been with recently have all said the same thing, that he is a great clubhouse guy and he's great for the young players overall. So I don't understand the plan. Like Andrew Heaney too. All these teams were looking for pitching, and you could have maximized Mitch Keller in this market too. They did not do that. They took him off the market and never really like seriously engaged with teams, which it's baffling to me. And again, I'm not one to call for people's jobs. I think it's mean. I think it's not the right thing to do.
It wouldn't make me feel good if someone called for my job, so I try not to do it unless I absolutely have to. But
I mean, hey, people have done it for me too. So
it's certainly happened.
It's part of it for sure.
The no market for Pham shocks me. If I had to pick one of those guys to not move, it would have been Heaney just because of the recent struggles.
Yep.
But Keller is an excellent point, and I want to hit on that as well. And I know we were trying to talk about the three biggest losers, and then we got stuck on the Pittsburgh Pirates, who are history's biggest loser. We're just going to do this for quite a while. So I apologize, but I think it's worth it.
Totally.
Keller didn't move, and they were uncomfortable talking about him because of the control, and it felt like when they were going to trade him, maybe it was a situation where they were eventually going to have to take less than they wanted to because they were going to foist the contract on somebody else, right?
Yeah.
But ultimately, Keller doesn't move.
Nope.
Nobody moves. Alcantara doesn't move. Edward Cabrera doesn't move. Zach Gallen doesn't move. Nope. Like, the starting pitching market was there for somebody to jump in and claim it. And the Pirates could have easily been that team with Mitch Keller and get an elevated return and get what I would call, even if they're hoping someone takes on that contract, still a better return than the Bednar package.
Exactly. And like, and it was there for the taking. And we saw the reliever prices too, like Duran, like all these guys, Griffin Jacks at the end too, which that one, I did not expect that by any means. There were so many high-end relievers who were moved and the prices were so high, you would get way more for Keller in return. And the price for Joe Ryan was too much for teams. And they had a chance to really take advantage of the market. They could have ended up adding maybe two top 100 prospects somewhere in that range. The price tag and the controllable years was obviously a good thing, but also a concern for some teams and like being able to take on that big of a contract. But it was an opportunity that they could have taken advantage of. It could have changed your team, move him, add to the farm system, and then you call up Bubba Chandler, who's the top pitching prospect in baseball. It was so obvious, and yet they missed. Like, what? Like, what the hell were they thinking? Like, I don't get it. I couldn't tell you.
No. I mean, we're this is like a therapy session. We're not even Pirates fans.
No.
We're just sort of sitting here trying to math out what they possibly could have been considering here. And now I think we get into the Bednar package because centered around Rafael Flores. Look, Rafael Flores is a good prospect.
Yep.
An undrafted free agent that the Yankees have turned into a catcher first baseman who solved the AA level before moving up to AAA. There are some concerning red flags there. Strikeout rate, I mean, Edgleen Perez, the younger catcher they also got, makes better swing decisions than Flores. Yep. In a small sample size of AAA for Flores, the strikeout rate has escalated, right? So In my mind, Flores, a top 10 Yankees prospect, someone they spun out of nothing, is a great second piece for David Bednar. Yep. And if you're able to pull off, we know they were scouting Carlos LaGrange, the 103-mile-an-hour flamethrower the Yankees have, who's top five in the system. If you can leverage the market and turn it into LaGrange, Flores, Perez, or a third piece, that package makes sense, and I think the Yankees do that. I think at the end of the day, under the gun, Brian Cashman says yes to that trade.
I think that's fair.
How do the Pirates wait until the last day and settle on a package headlined by a number two piece?
It's a hell of a question, and it's something I've been trying to figure out too. And we even saw Ben Charrington say, like, they like Flores, obviously. I mean, they got him.
This is the most confusing part to me. The Charrington quote makes no sense.
But they had access to better players than him.
And we had access to better players than what we took from the Yankees. And, if true, don't say it.
No, he said the quiet part out loud, and it makes him look awful. And it's a quote that every Pirates fan is talking about at this point.
Yeah.
And being like, what the heck is our general manager doing? I call myself, I almost said a bad word. But it's deserving of what the Pirates are doing here, what they're not doing. And, I mean, they like the overall package from what they got or what they ended up getting from the Yankees more than what was offered with a better player headlining it, which to me makes no sense. I want clear, like, difference-making talent, and maybe Flores can be that guy. But they also got three catchers in return for David Bednar as well, which that part's weird. They have, I mean, their catching situation in Pittsburgh is bad now. They got Joey Bart, Henry Davis, who has been a big bust at number one overall. It's a really confusing organization. I've heard some other stuff behind the scenes. I can't say what it necessarily is.
But just so everyone knows, there's even more going on, and it's even worse below the surface than we might know.
It's really, really, really bad. And to me, like I said it about the Angels and Artie Moreno the other day, I'll say it again with the Pirates. Until Bob Nutting is not the owner there, they're going to continue to be mediocre. That's just the current state of where that franchise is.
We've done enough on the Pirates, I think. We have sent them into an early grave, unfortunately. There are still two more losers to discuss. If you were trying to pick from the rest of the field, I think the Pirates differentiated themselves, entered a new stratosphere of losing the trade deadline, and again, like, had the kind of bad trade deadline that Bill Simmons in the 90s used to make fun of NBA GMs for having terrible trade deadlines. I thought we'd evolved past that. Like, I didn't think we would ever again reach that level of futility. We got there with Ben Charrington, so congratulations. But if you had to pick, I can't think of another two clear losers. Like, it's a differentiated tier on the layer cake. But who else would you say came up short of expectations of this particular trade deadline or made a trade that you would call just outright malfeasance?
Yeah, I would. And this might be controversial. I would say the Brewers, if I'm being totally honest. And, like, let me rephrase this. Let me clarify this. Is the last week of the deadline, to me, was a failure for them because pitching was not necessarily a need for them, and yet they went out and got Shelby Miller. They got an outfielder from the Padres in that.
Oh, Brandon Lockridge.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Nestor Cortez for Brandon Lockridge. Yeah. Another Yankee-on-Yankee trade, the former Yanks.
And, I mean, so that part to me was a fail by them because Suarez was a difference-making piece, and it was something that myself and so many others were, like, begging the Brewers to do. Did not ultimately do it, but we got to look, like, full picture here. So week of the deadline, they lost, but overall big picture, they won because Andrew Vaughn has been unbelievable in Milwaukee. Yeah. What he has done, he looks like the guy that was supposed to be the number three overall pick. Like, he's been everything for them. I saw a stat. He's in the same company as, like, Barry Bonds with his overall numbers since he's gone in Milwaukee, which, I mean, if you're in the same company as Barry Bonds, you're doing pretty good for yourself.
Overall, yeah, talented fellow, I think, to match up with.
I think his career is pretty good.
If you're Barry Bonds at the end of the day, I think you're pretty proud of what you put together.
And then, not to dunk on the Pirates again, but Quinn Priester.
So everybody keeping watch, it's been a minute and 42 seconds since we've dunked on the Pittsburgh Pirates. Yeah. We had a 15-minute segment, and then we actually circled back around to dunking on them for something we forgot about that sucked that they did a month ago.
Yeah, I mean, they had Quinn Priester, they drafted him in the first round. It did not pan out. They moved him to Boston for Nick York.
And Boston hasn't really made a misstep in a while, even with their inactive trade deadline. They still look great. I'm not sure why they gave up on Priester and left themselves shorthanded.
Yeah, and they moved on from him. And the Brewers gave up a lot to get Priester. But one thing I've learned with Milwaukee is if they like a pitcher, do not doubt their moves at all. And it's worked out masterfully for them. He signed controllable long-term, cheap too. So it was a great move by them. But I wish he did more in the last week of the deadline, getting Suarez or something. But there's There's another team that I want to talk about as a loser that,
yeah,
based on your comment just now, it might surprise you.
Interesting. Okay, go for it. Because I also think, and I think I know where you're headed with this. I will say they won maybe the most lopsided pitching matchup of the year last night, walking off the Astros with Cooper Criswell on the mound against Hunter Brown. Roman Anthony is the truth. Red Sox have a great roster. That said, their deadline, given how wide open the American League is right now, and the fact that I think they can still win the World Series. I don't think they prevented themselves from winning the World Series this year, but I think they could have had a deadline that cemented it, and they had a C minus, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's dead on, and you read my mind perfectly. It's the Boston Red Sox. Like, they, it wasn't bad by any means. The Dustin May trade. What the heck was going on there?
I think they went 1-for-2. Like, yeah. Steven Matz is a helpful piece and a moderate upgrade. And they're gonna, I don't think they're gonna be disappointed by what they get in Steven Matz down the stretch. But Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam on the Fenway Rundown made a great point yesterday. Steven Matz is the good one, right? We like Matz. We don't like the addition of May right now.
No.
Even the one that we like, they have Justin Wilson in the 7th and 8th right now. They have a lefty closer in Aroldis Chapman, who they kept. They have Brennan Bernardino in the middle innings. And they have Chris Murphy, who's been an ascendant lefty who they called up like a month ago. If there's one thing they don't need, it's a lefty reliever with a 3.5 ERA. A helpful piece, but you've got three of those and Aroldis Chapman.
Like, what was the thinking behind that? And, like, and Craig Breslow is a smart guy. He's got an extensive history, like, both playing and being an executive. And yet, it feels like sometimes he doesn't think. He talks like a robot, too, which that doesn't help connect him with that fan base whatsoever. But the Dustin May trade caught me. Like, I had heard it was coming, and then all of a sudden, like, around the deadline time, I heard that James Tibbs III was moved to the Dodgers. And I'm like, did they make another trade? And it was, the guy was like, no, he's a return for May. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
And James Tibbs III was also the return for Rafael Devers, or like the key part of the return. And to move on from him to get a rental guy made little sense to me. That being said, I had the indications from the moment that they ended up getting James Tibbs III that he was going to be a trade candidate right away.
Yes.
And he obviously has moved now. He's with the Dodgers, who Clayton Kershaw said he didn't know who he was, so that's kind of interesting. But, that was kind of a swing and a miss for me from the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, I think I'm just mostly perplexed because, like, it's a weird loser because it's almost like a compliment slam. It's like a compliment sandwich of, like, I think the Red Sox have done a great job putting together a feisty roster and using their farm and calling up Roman Anthony at the right time and finding a soft part of their schedule. And I never thought they would run up a 10-game winning streak, but I thought they had a place with the Rockies and Nats and Rays at home where they could go 8-2 and get themselves back into this. They went 10-0.
Yep.
So they set themselves up, knew exactly what they were doing. And still, I don't think they're doomed by any means. But you're talking about a team that played, say what you will about the Devers trade. Yeah. I don't believe it's addition by subtraction the way that they do, but we'll see long term how that turns out.
Yeah.
Regardless, they took a bold swing. They set themselves up to be able to make themselves undeniably a contender in the second half. And instead, what they did was pass on the opportunity and leave it to chance and say, it felt like they set themselves up for a move they never made, and they rolled the dice to get to a place where they could make a championship chess move, and instead just decided, we actually like what we have, and we're going to hold stand pat here. And it worked, one game into the post-deadline era, nice victory, but one game does not a second half make.
No, but I wish they would have gotten a Joe Ryan. I mean, let's
talk about because I think a lot of Boston fans thought they were getting Joe Ryan, and not just on deadline day. If you look back to, we were at the All-Star game 2.5 weeks ago. Every Red Sox was talking with Joe Ryan, posing with Joe Ryan. Rob Bradford got a picture of Garrett Crochet. Joe Ryan and Alex Bregman put it on social media. The Red Sox, Ryan and I think Crochet walked into the media session together.
Yep.
And the Red Sox put it up on their Instagram. They knew exactly what they were doing because they knew that the fan chatter was Joe Ryan is the difference-making piece here.
Yep.
So any chance the Red Sox had to pump up the Ryan connection at the All-Star game, they did it. Any chance Red Sox media had to show Ryan and the Red Sox fraternizing, they did it. Now, this connection is not over. And I would, for one, be shocked if the Red Sox and Twins don't revisit Ryan and get close to the point of completion this offseason. Yep. In fact, they've made it so obvious that I think the Yankees have every right to pop into the conversation and try to outbid them and try to make things uncomfortable for the Red Sox. I think the Red Sox have done themselves a disservice in making the amount they love Joe Ryan as clear as they have.
Yep.
That said, Fox Sports MLB tweeted that a Joe Ryan deal was done.
I'm glad you said it, because I was going to.
About 40 minutes before the deadline, and so did Yahoo. And as far as I can tell, it came from a John Morosi tweet where he said the talks were heating up. Cotillo, after the deadline, said never close. Conflicting reports there. But as from my perspective, it looks like all that happened there was a misinterpreted John Morosi tweet. But if you have any more insight on what led to Red Sox fans being misled into thinking a Joe Ryan move was near rather than a winter excursion, I would love to know.
It was a classic mix-up of a social media person misinterpreting a tweet from John Morosi. Like, did talks heat up? I mean, it depends on who you talk to, but nothing was ever close from what I was told, and it was very unlikely that he was going to be moved at all. And, I mean, you could have made the argument that the Twins should have moved him considering just the overall sell-off that they had. But they held a very high asking price for Joe Ryan. It was never close to being met. They asked the Red Sox for a bunch of different packages, and like they had plenty of talks for sure, but nothing was close. The overall deadline from the Red Sox, they should have gotten Ryan. They should have gotten an impact starting pitcher. They tried for Merrill Kelly. Mm-hmm. At one point, I thought that was going to be happening, but the Rangers swooped in and ended up getting him. The Twins' overall deadline was absolutely masterful. We'll get into that at some point during the show, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But the Joe Ryan stuff, that was just a really unfortunate mix-up from the bus, from a bunch of different media outlets, because it was never close. It was never really, it never had a realistic chance of happening. And now he's in Minnesota with a bunch of AAA guys. Yeah.
Yeah, the Twins goodbye posts. Like, the Twins, you know, people talk about on social media, you got to curate your Instagram so that, like, your grid looks nice and there's nothing, you know, you don't have too many selfies or whatever. The Twins forgot that cardinal rule. They did not curate their grid. It was just goodbye posts. It was like, goodbye to you, see you Willie Castro, get out of here Griffin Jacks, like Louis Varland, you get one, we'll make one for everybody. They say goodbye to their whole major league roster, essentially. And where from here, there was also a misleading tweet. I'm going to slam an anonymous guy. Sorry for body slamming a person who I don't even remember who it is. But there was a viral tweet going around that was like, the Twins only have two people under contract for next year. You know, Joe Ryan and Byron Buxton or whatever. Yeah. Or Byron Buxton and Pablo Lopez. Technically, that's true, but every pre-ARB guy like Joe Ryan is still going to be a Minnesota Twin.
Yep.
Every ARB guy and every pre-ARB guy. So the Twins have, like, you know, 17 pieces who you're familiar with who will be back next year unless they make more moves.
Yep.
So that was misleading and got Twins fans riled up. That said, they still seem planless. I liked some of their returns more than others did. I like Tate a lot coming out of Philly. I like some of the things they were able to swing. I like Alan Roden getting an opportunity. But objectively, they stripped themselves down to the core. And the Carlos Correa move was the seismic change of the trade deadline.
Like, I don't like selling off to that extent, but I like that they were convicted in what they were trying to do. Like, you look at the Marlins, they kind of half-assed their sell-off.
Sure,
the Pirates,
yeah.
I don't even know how to describe
that. The Pirates 1/9th-assed their sell-off. They
yeah,
did nothing.
It was terrible. And but the Twins were convicted in their sell-off, and they traded some really, really good pieces. Both their bullpen arms went, traded Harrison Bader. I traded so many different guys. Danny Coulomb, by the way.
Yeah.
Very underrated player, and he should be very good for Texas. But I give Derek Falvey a lot of credit that he was convicted in his plan. Wonder how much ownership stuff ended up impacting him, because obviously you have an ownership change happening in Minnesota, or hopefully sooner rather than later. But it was something that it felt like the reverse Preller. Like, Preller was convicted in buying to the extent that he did, but Falvey was convicted in selling off to just in an epic magnitude. They're going to be really bad now, but going forward, they should benefit from it.
Yeah, and Ben Cherington was just convicted for war crimes. So yeah, three convicted GMs.
And it's unfortunate, too, because, like, Cherington,
It might be a bad GM.
Okay. I'm starting to get a sense that Ben Cherington might just be a bad GM.
But he's a really good dude, and I know as a fact it kills him that David Bednar found out about the trade on social media.
Like, yeah.
He found out he's going to New York, going to the Bronx on social media, and that bothers him. It was, at that point, it was in the medical process, so it was no guarantee it was going to get done, but it bothered him, and it's something that I try to be mindful of. I don't want people... It's happened to me before where I've tweeted a story and a player has found out he's been traded through me. And that's a really bad, draining feeling. And it happened here. It'll happen again, but it sucks.
It just sucks. And it is, in this day and age, almost impossible to avoid, especially given the speed of news breaking that you have to deal with on a daily basis. It's not shocking that you've run into that.
No, and even 18-year-old me had it happen, where Kike Hernandez was traded from the Marlins to the Dodgers. And I found out about it. And then next thing I know, it's like I message him on Twitter. And I'm like, hey, just so you know, you're getting traded to the Dodgers. And he's like, wait, what? Like, what are you talking about? And he was in Puerto Rico at the time, and he pulled over on the side of the road to try to, like, text me, call his family, call his agent, being like, what's going on? And then he got to confirm that he was being traded. And Kike Hernandez found out through an 18-year-old teenager that he was being traded to the other side of the country. So I thought that was... It was crazy, it was cool, but it was also like, oh crap, like there's some actual power behind this account.
Yeah. Yeah. Way worse for you if you're Kike and you learn that from a child, ostensibly.
Yeah, it was bad. I felt terrible, but hey, we're still cool to this day, so that's nice.
Good. A couple more teams I got to hit on who fall somewhere in between. We appreciate everybody joining us to talk trade deadline. We're going to be back here tomorrow, 2:30 again, wrapping things up, talking more trade deadline thoughts, cards, maybe breaking stuff, answering your questions. I don't know. Again, I keep saying breaking stuff out loud to manifest it, just sort of hoping someone will buy us wax. Like, yeah. I feel like...
Oh, I thought you meant like breaking stories.
No, well, maybe. You never know. Yeah, but I mean, modern wax, vintage, whatever. We would love to have some up here tomorrow's show. A couple teams. I want to touch on the local teams, too, for Chicagoans. We're really excited to be in Chicago, obviously. And strange deadlines for both sides. Bold decisions made. Yep. So I want to close on them, but I want to go Angels first because, and I know we've got a Baseball Insiders Discord. We've got people chattering. We have so many Angels fans in there. Good Angels fans. Beyond the Halo, you know, big Angels accounts. And every day they ask us, you know, what the plan is. Why are they not more enthusiastic about a sell-off? Why don't they seem to understand who they are and what they do? Yep. And you basically have the same answer for them every day. And we have now passed another trade deadline where, leading up to the deadline, they were upset that they had bought Luis Garcia and Andrew Chafin. And I said, you know, relax. I wouldn't call that a hard buy. I would say, let's wait until it settles. Maybe they're just trying to, you know, get innings eaters so that when they do sell Kenley Jansen and Reed Detmers, they have something taken care of. They can still be competitive. We got to the end of the deadline, and they stopped buying other than Oswald Peraza of the Yankees, and I can tell you that's not really a guy who's going to be a difference maker at this point, move the needle, and didn't sell anybody at all. And I do feel like you've alluded to it. There's just one person to blame here.
It's Ari Marino, the team owner there. He is by far and away the worst owner in baseball, and I hope he sells the team because the Angels, they have some fun pieces on that team, and they have good people in that organization, and Perry is a great human being running the show there as their general manager, but he's got his hands strapped, and if he had a different owner, I think things would look a lot different. They probably would have sold off, and they had some pieces too. Like, they had Tyler Anderson, Taylor Ward, Joe Adell. They had so many pieces that they could have moved, did not. They stood pat, added a little bit, and it's the most confusing organization in baseball. And every day that I that Thomas Hatch was designated for assignment by the Royals.
Right now?
Yeah, just now.
Wow, breaking. Thomas Hatch. Anybody got Thomas Hatch rookies? We're sitting on them. Now's the time. Sell. He just got DFA'd.
But going... we were talking about the Angels.
You're talking about the Angels.
Yeah. It's... If Perry had a different owner, they probably would have sold off. They would have been totally different. Instead, they're continuing to try to be competitive. Perry's trying to be convincing to the media that they are competitive, when in reality, he knows, everybody knows, that team is just stuck in just pure mediocrity.
And Mike Trout's fate, you know, hopefully has not been sealed Hall of Famer, but feels like he's getting closer to the end of the line, and yeah, that team is approaching, you know, an inevitable end.
And if he ends up ending his career and not winning a postseason game, that's the biggest career fail by I mean, anyone?
I mean, one of my wildest statistics that I hope desperately changes, I want to stop saying this, I don't want to say this out loud. I have attended 33% of Mike Trout's career playoff games. He's played three. I went to one. Yeah. So that must stop. I never want to say that again.
We need to get him to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Philly, he's born and raised in Philly. He's a huge Eagles fan.
He's always in Philadelphia every weekend of the offseason going to Eagles home games.
Like, he's meant to like play at least one season in Philly, if not more. Hopefully he ends up just having a come to his senses moment and demands a trade. He's a loyal guy. All he cares about is baseball, the weather, and the Eagles. That's all he
cares
about.
Planes, yeah.
Yeah, planes. I mean, it's just, he's a very simple guy, and I sure as heck hope he demands a trade, because baseball and just fans in general deserve to have Mike Trout in the postseason.
And I do think his contract has long seemed unmovable.
Yeah.
Nothing is unmovable at this point. Rafael Devers, $300 million got moved. Carlos Correa got moved for a reliever with a 6 ERA because of the number attached to it.
That is the equivalent of being traded for a bag of baseballs, is what that was.
And I wish that reliever well, but that deal was basically, we are trading money. It's no longer impossible, and enough of Mike Trout's mega deal has now been, you know, scratched off, and we've already surpassed, you know, we passed those years. It's done. You can put him in the past. Yep. They can move that money if he does demand a trade. There will be takers, and Philadelphia will probably be a taker.
You would think.
Because injured Mike Trout is an upgrade on the Max Kepler spot right now.
And you also got to look at it, too. Like, part of the reason why the Dodgers ended up signing Shohei Ohtani, obviously, tremendously talented player, but it was for marketing purposes, and it can make the organization a ton of money. And Philly, if they end up adding Mike Trout, a hometown kid like that, you can make so much money off of just PR, just in anything there. So it's another aspect of this that they have to consider. And if he ever does become available, he's a guy they absolutely have to consider, try to add. If there's got to be other teams as well, for sure.
Yeah, 100%, that will be a bidding war. And we do hope that something gets done at some point, because, again, I can't. I went to Mike Trout's one of his three playoff games. It was underwhelming. He struck out a few times. It was a great game. The Royals hit an extra inning homer. Yeah. A drunk guy got kicked out of our section and waited outside the stadium to fight me as I left.
I mean, I think that way every time we're done with a podcast.
So yeah, there might be some drunk guys waiting outside to fight me. Ben Charrington, you know, swinging from a whiskey bottle out there, trying to get his licks in.
And also, another, not to cut you off and go to a different subject.
Please, I had nothing more to say about that. Cut me off quickly.
Another deadline addition that just happened. I mean, people knew it was coming, but Blake Snell just got activated by the Dodgers. Big news. It's basically the Dodgers at this point of the season adding an ace to their rotation. So that's a big move for them. Get him back. If he can stay healthy, that could end up being a game changer for them come postseason time.
Blake Snell in, Dustin May out. I would call that an upgrade.
That is a big upgrade for sure. That would be like filling in Joe Ryan for Dustin May. Shout out to the Boston Red Sox.
Could have done it, but didn't do it, unfortunately. All right, let's do the local teams before we leave. And I definitely want to do a World Series prediction, too. And a reminder, we'll be back here tomorrow at 2:30 again, taking the trade deadline from a different angle, maybe opening some cards. Again, I'm going to say it over and over. If anybody has a Don Drysdale certified autograph, $60 or under, come find me. I'm your man. I just took cash out of the ATM. I can do it. I can make it happen. You watched me.
I believe in you.
The Chicago White Sox and Chicago Cubs are in two different spots. Handle the trade deadline differently. And this is crazy to say. I can't believe this is coming out of my mouth. But the White Sox are almost in a similar position to the Red Sox, not in the American League standings, but in terms of the offense is working right now. The prospects who've been called up, it's coming to fruition. The vision is happening, and they basically decided, we are going to pick up Luis Robert Jr.'s option for next year. That is not a piece we want to trade at his current value. We like what we have. We like Teal. We like Cuero. We like the names. We like Shane Smith. We like Grant Taylor. Like the Mydroth. They keep calling up guys, and it's working, and they are they're 9-4 in the second half, I believe. They have matched last year's win total. It is August 2nd. So some stuff got done, right? They sell Adrian Hauser to the Rays. They do some business, but they don't do much, and they decide to reinvest in Robert Jr. for next year. And I'm curious if you think that is the right decision. And basically, what do you think they believe right now about the state of their roster and the future of their roster?
I don't think it was the right decision by them by any means.
Sure.
Holding on to Luis Robert Jr.
Sure.
Because a week before the deadline passed, or a week before the deadline got here, I was told definitively that they were not going to just trade Luis Robert Jr. just to trade him. That they wanted to get something meaningful in return, and that they viewed him as a guy that they could have for at least two more seasons considering the options. And I'm like, okay, like, the source on that was very good, but I thought it was posturing at its finest. And then they obviously held on to him, kept him, moved Adrian Hauser. It's a very confusing deadline for me. They were convicted in their plan. They stuck to the plan, which I can give them credit. I don't think it was a good plan by any means. But Luis Robert Jr., tremendously talented player. He's been hurt a lot throughout his career. So it's a case where, I mean, I can understand the projection. They did it last year and holding on to him. Did it again this year and holding on to him. I don't think there's any scenario in which way that they end up picking up his $20 million option. They probably going to lose him to free agency if that's the guess. But
interesting.
I remember after I reported that, I had a lot of White Sox fans reach out to me and were like, what are you talking about in terms of that they were going to hold on to Luis Robert Jr.? And it happened. And the Adrian Hauser thing was interesting. I didn't have Tampa Bay on my radar for him at all.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was going elsewhere. I know Cubs were definitely very involved there.
Yes.
But Tampa Bay was not on my radar, to say the least.
The Cubs side of this, too, and we know that they had, I think they admitted that they had talks with the White Sox for Hauser, and were close-ish at a certain point. Willie Castro, again, a nice piece. I think Cubs fans, they're right on that borderline of loser for me, just in terms of, like, 1 year with Kyle Tucker. You look at the Yankees trade deadline with their 1 year of Juan Soto last year. That was kind of like, Jazz, impact player, Jazz Chisholm Jr. Mark Leiter, reliever who we like the metrics, but we don't know if he's an impact player. No. And then Eniel De Los Santos, complete non-entity. The Cubs almost fall in that bucket in terms of you have Kyle Tucker for 2 months. You are a playoff team, we know. Anyone who gets in the dance is dangerous, but where's that Eugenio Suarez? Where's that Merrill Kelly? Where was that Alex Bregman this offseason when you had a chance to put a cherry on your offseason? And I don't think Cubs fans are really happy to hear, don't worry, guys, we came close to a deal for Adrian Hauser cross town, and that's really the best you had in your quiver? Just almost a deal for someone who is a number five starter masquerading as a number three right now?
And he was released, or he opted out of his contract, a minor league contract with the Texas Rangers before the season even started. So they could have had him for nothing. And yet they did not get him. And they tried to trade for him. They failed to get him. That being, they tried, like, adding an impact player. They made an effort for Mackenzie Gore. The asking price there was just astronomically high. And they were never going to do it. Fun fact, actually. I'll open up the curtain a little bit here for the deadline. I got a text from a very, very prominent league source at the deadline. He said, go to the Cubs, dig. And I'm like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. And I texted someone with each team, and the response immediately were like, what are you talking about? And it did not happen, but they tried. They tried for him. They tried for some others. Came up empty. It was a deadline that left a lot to be desired. Should have done more. I like the Willie Castro addition, as you said, but it feels like a case where they're going to be left, they're going to be getting out of the postseason early and could end up watching the Brewers just fly by them.
Well, I agree with you, and we've got so much more to touch on tomorrow. I got some deadline awards I want to give out, end of season predictions, talking about the possible playoff bracket. Rookies we're excited to see come up and get a chance now. So please join us at 2:30 again tomorrow, and we're excited to do another trade deadline recap special and forward thinking podcast. One final question today before we sign off. I teased this earlier. You mentioned the Padres as a legitimate World Series favorite now. How did the trade deadline change your World Series prediction, and what is your current World Series prediction?
So going into the deadline, I had the Dodgers being the team that I thought would win the World Series. I thought they would go back-to-back. Still very prominent in that race. I'm going with San Diego, though. And I love A.J. Preller. I love the roster he's built. A little worry about the manager there in Mike Schilt. I don't know if he's necessarily the guy that can get him over or get that team over the hump by any means. But the talent on the roster is second to none. It's a stroke of genius by Preller, if I'm being totally real. So I'm going with the Padres. Adam, I'm throwing it right back to you. What do you got?
Red Sox, Phillies, Phillies in seven.
That's saying a lot coming from a Yankees fan. I never thought I would hear you say that the Red Sox would go out of the World Series. I think they're going to be bounced early, if I'm being totally real.
Well, there we go. I mean, that's why we embrace debate on the Baseball Insiders. They just feel like, look, right now I'm judging them based on a heater. That heater might end. You know, we never know. I might feel very differently about that. But I was expecting them to come out last night with a dud after that trade deadline. Yeah. And if that had been this is so silly to hinge a prediction. But we're talking about predictions that get affected by a trade deadline. Yeah. If they had come out with a dud last night and just gotten blown out by the Houston Astros, I would not have mentioned them on this podcast today.
Yeah.
And if the Yankees had managed to hold on to 6-0 and 9-4 leads yesterday, I would have said the Yankees have now become the favorite in the American League. And I would have stuck with the Phillies in the NL. As it stands today, I'm saying Red Sox. I think the Red Sox and Yankees are going to duke it out for the remainder of the second half. And whoever's slumping the least at the end of the second half will make the World Series out of the American League.
And
we'll see.
I think the Yankees are going to come out on top in that race, if I'm being honest. And I know you're going to appreciate that.
I do.
I don't think the Red Sox, I don't think they're going to be here to last. I'm calling it now. They feel like a team to me that fades. And there's going to be people calling for Craig Breslow's job even more than they are now. So that's my feel. That's my prediction. So we'll see. But
No.
Yeah, you're devastated by that.
What a devastating way to end the podcast. I'm upset now. Thank you for joining us, everybody, here on the Baseball Insiders, live from the National in Chicago. Again, 2:30 tomorrow, we'll be back on this stage, giving out trade deadline awards, talking about the end of the season and who we're excited to see. Robert Murray, there's no one I'd rather do this with than you. This was extremely fun. This was a wild way to start the morning. I have a headache from the lights in this building.
Yeah.
I don't know how we're feeling, but we got plenty more today. We're going to be backstage talking to the folks after the autograph stage. So plenty more content coming out on FanSided, FanSided's YouTube, TikTok, Instagram account, Baseball Insiders on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram as well. And we're going to be putting up a lot of great stuff. Yanks Go Yard, if you are a Yankees fan specifically, we got an interview with CeCe Sabathia yesterday that's going up. So stay tuned for more great stuff. We're going to go talk to some athletes, get you some more content, and see you right back here tomorrow, Robert. Does that sound good?
That sounds great to me. Hey, for a first live show in person, I think we did pretty darn well, baby.
I think we did too. Happy trade deadline, everybody. We will see you tomorrow with plenty more here on the Baseball Insiders.
Thank you, everybody.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.